Welcome to another exciting episode of the Business of Digital podcast, featuring your hosts, Matt Siltala and Dave Rohr. Hey guys, excited to have you join us on another one of these Business of Digital podcast episodes. And we are continuing our 100th episode series. And I am excited and, this is going to be a fun one. I'm excited to welcome and introduce Jim Banks. How's it going, Jim?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic. Thank you for asking, Matt.
Thank you so much for joining us. And I want to jump right in with you, but I do have to recognize, hey, Dave.
Just to make sure I'm not here and not muted. Thank you.
How's it going there? All right. So the funnest way that I've been able to start these, Jim, is I've done this with everyone that's been on this. And again, I do appreciate you taking the time and working with our schedules and making it all work out. But as far as when kicking this off, if you will, what we've been doing is kind of going through a I am X old in the industry. It comes from that meme of, we got the idea from I was how old when I learned about this or whatever. But one of the things that we've been doing with everybody, it's kind of been funny to see is, I'm Alta Vista old, or Dave is Florida Update old, for example. And so where would Jim Banks be? Where is Jim Banks old in this industry?
And for digital, just for digital. Digital, not anything yes. You did before, yeah. Because everyone has a different answer for that, so yeah.
Yeah, I think we'll keep it clean on the. I am go-to old.
Go-to.
What was it? Go-to toast, or was it go-to?
No, it was go-to. Go-to was the kind of forerunner of Overture, right? Yeah. And wow. Back then it was like all the clicks were a penny a throw. There was probably, again, I don't even know how many advertisers there were, but really not that many. And it was outrage when they decided to increase their bids from like a penny to 2 cents a click. And it was like, that's outrageous. How can you possibly charge 2 cents a click?
So just for comparison, think of what's an expensive, like asbestos.
Oh, mesothelioma.
Mesothelioma. Like what was the most expensive keyword you bid on that you could ever say?
Well, again, I think, are we asking deliberately or accidentally, right? Because I've made a few mistakes where accidentally we bid a lot more for a keyword than maybe we should have done. But again, fortunately, we had some kind of good things in place to kind of prevent us coming into a bill of like 40 grand. But,
40 grand would be nothing for many companies these days.
Yeah. But for, that was over a weekend.
Well, he's talking one penny a click.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. So instead of bidding 35 cents for a click, or 35 pence, as we call it in the UK, I actually bid £35. Oh. And this was in the day when you paid what you bid, right? So it wasn't like you bid £35, you pay a penny more than the next one, so you only paid like a pound. This was like you paid £35.
Wow.
And fortunately, I'd set my daily budget at like, I think, £150, so I only spent sort of a couple of hundred pounds. Yeah, but it was still, it could have been a disaster. But in terms of like the actual cost of real clicks, certainly in insurance, I've been paying sort of $50-$60 a click consistently for quite some time. And I think it's one of those things, the value to the company is huge. And it's again, there are certain industries, if you're not first, you're nowhere, right? And and definitely that's one of those. So you need to be super aggressive with them.
And when that first started out, you're talking about maybe you're paying $60 now, it might have been 50 cents.
I think it's one of those things. There was definitely an awful lot of ego stuff went back on then, and I always kind of look at we used to walk advertisers up, right? So again, if we wanted to kind of like force people to kind of go up, so again, it used to be this. So when GoTo became Overture, there was this thing where you paid a penny like less than the person above, right? So if you bid $10, the person below would bid, and they bid like $9.99, you would pay $10. But if the next person below the $9.99 was like 50 cents, then you'd only pay 51 cents. So it became a lot of you know, a lot of skullduggery and kind of things that were designed to trip your competitors up.
And bleed
as,
them dry.
As much as it sounds like, you know, we were trying to do good for our advertisers, which we were also trying to trip our competitors up.
So that leads me into like one of the first meat of them questions that I want to ask you, but I'm going to kind of give a little bit of a background so you can kind of see where I'm going with this. I remember, you know, some of the most exciting times was back when I was first learning about, you know, or when I was first doing stuff with AdSense, and, you know, you guys brought up mesothelioma, and so it got me thinking back to, you know, and this is before I got banned. I joke with everyone that we've had on that I feel bad for anyone with a Siltala name ever trying to get approved for an AdSense account, because it's probably not going to happen because of me. But but I remember we were like, one of the things that excited me the most was how much money I could make on just doing stupid stuff. And again, I did a lot of stupid stuff back in the day, but mesothelioma lawyers, I mean, where we were making, you know, close to $50 a click from people. It was insane times. And so when I look back at like some of my fondest memories, whether they were good or bad, and again, this was just growing and learning and doing, you know, what everyone else was doing and at the time. But when you think back to that, Jim, like what do you think would be like your one moment or what excited you the most about the industry back in the day?
So again, I actually look at that situation. So again, when you look at some of the tools that people that do PPC today, you know, use. So again, like I mean, it's called Google Ads now, so we'll call it Google Ads Editor, but like AdWords Editor of old, and the My Client Center.
Can I correct you?
No. You can, of course. but yeah, but it was always one of those things where, you know, like we had really good relationships with Google pre-IPO, right? So all the pre-IPO Googlers were great people, you know, and some of them had gone on to do absolutely fantastic things since they kind of like got their big payouts from Google, right? Certainly on the obviously on the organic side, you had your Matt Cutses of the world and so on. But, you know, on the paid side, we had people like Thomas Corte, who in here in the UK, he's now running a VC incubator called AngelPad, doing incredibly well. But, you know, he was the guy that we used to kind of deal with a lot. We used to go out on boats with Google. Again, we just had much, much greater access to them. But I think for us, it was really just a case of, you know, the kind of the rule book didn't exist. So a lot of what we did was making things up as we went along. So I know that whole AdSense thing with mesothelioma, right? They introduced what they call smart pricing for AdSense after people dined out on that, right? And we didn't do as well as some people. We certainly made good money. And again, some of the things that we were playing around with was disabling the back button, disabling scrolling, having two AdSense blocks on the page. You couldn't do anything other than click on the AdSense blocks, right? And that was the only way you could get off the page or close your browser down, right? You know, and as you say, making kind of decent money, and we just kind of said, well, we're just helping you with the errors in your system, right? And Google went, thank you for that, appreciate it. You know, smart pricing now, instead of getting, you know, $30 a click, we were getting like 3 or 4 cents, right? So it really took away the incentive for us to kind of continue to do those. So a lot of it was, you know, like to go back to AdWords Editor, My Client Center, you know, I kept saying to them, well, Google, it would be really good if we could do this. So one of the things, I was traveling a little bit backwards and forwards to Hong Kong, and I said, it would be really good if I could download accounts, work on them on the plane, and then upload things when I got to the other end. They went, well, that's interesting, that's good. And then I also said, it's a real pain to have to log into every single account we manage, right? Wouldn't it be good if we had one central login where we could manage all of the accounts in one place? And they went, yeah, that's a good idea. So I always kind of say to people, I helped Google build AdWords Editor and My Client Center.
That's awesome.
But, you know, but again, we had access to the kind of the engineers that built the platform. You know, we were able to kind of give them feedback. So again, I mean, I always remember one of the sort of incidents I had basically an argument with Larry Page, right? I got kind of pulled onto a call with Larry Page by the woman who ran Google in the UK. And basically I'd called Google out of, I think they'd introduced like a sort of like a broad match modified type setup where they were using synonyms, right? And I think, you know, the example that they used, I said, if you typed in the word Heathrow, right, they would also show you for the word Gatwick. right? And I'm like, those are two completely different. I mean, in the States, it's a little bit like if you look, type in LaGuardia and JFK, two completely different airports and totally not what you're looking for, right? So I just said, look, you know, you guys need to, you know, to just kind of tighten up a bit. And Larry said, yeah, okay, fair enough. I kind of accept that. So, you know, so again, for me, I think it was, we had access to people that you know, the reality of it now is you just don't get that sort of access. Even, you know, again, even guys like me who've been doing this a long time, we just don't have the access to the senior people at Google. Because, again, all the senior people that were any good have now left. And that probably sounds detrimental to the people that are there. They're good, but just they're not the same type of people.
No, totally. I get. We were just having this conversation. Basically, Greg Bozer just almost kind of mirrored exactly what you said, but when talking about Matt Cutts and just how he had almost unfeathered access, and how, you know, it was just those were the good old days, being able to just...
I mean, I still need to find Matt, because I took a taxi with him once and he didn't pay his way, so I still need to find him to get him to pay his way in the taxi.
I think he's in DC.
Yeah.
I might be wrong.
I'll go and look him up.
How funny. Well, I guess what... I guess kind of just moving on, and again, this is just however you want to go about this, but like there's so much stuff that's changed in the industry. But what kind of, you know, like when you're looking at things getting started or not things, but people getting started and them jumping in this industry or the youngsters these days or whatever, people that are fairly new to the industry, you know, maybe give them an idea of what your job was like 15 years ago or when you first got into this, like compared to what they may be doing today. Like just kind of set it up for them. And I think that would be interesting for them to hear.
Yeah, but it's really interesting. So again, I mean, I'll kind of go back to before I actually set up my first agency. Right? So I set up my first agency in 2000. But you know, before that I'd worked for three other companies and got laid off like three times in 18 months. And I thought, you know what, I don't want to do that anymore. So I set up my own agency. And I always remember, like, I originally wanted to be like an SEO agency, right? And I remember running around the room going, when I got my first client, I was running around the kind of living room saying to my wife, I've got a client, right? And I realized that the actual deal was about $65 a month, right? That's what I was getting.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, I'm going to have an awful lot of those to kind of make any money. So I started to kind of like look at other ways in which I could kind of do things. You know, I basically came across paid advertising. So I started to kind of basically do lead generation for my own business using paid ads. I then got a couple of leads come in and people said, oh, you know, can you manage these sorts of things for me? And I went, yeah, sure. And again, a lot of it was like, can you do this for me? And we would say, yes, sure. And then we would go and try and work out what it was that they're actually asking us to do and then try and figure out what the best way of handling it was, right? And I think when you look at it, I mean, in today's day and age, I mean, YouTube didn't exist. So we couldn't kind of go, let's go and check a YouTube video on how that works, right? It just didn't exist. So there was a really small community of people, certainly here in the UK, who were doing paid search. You know, we were a very small agency. Like, again, the mistake I made, my office was in probably completely the wrong place. Initially, it was in my house, you know, and I was working at home in my dressing gown. And then my wife said, oh, come on, let's go away on holiday. So I said, yeah, sure, great. And she goes, well, what's going to happen to the business? I'm like, well, I'll just have to hire somebody. She goes, well, they're not coming to the house, right? So I ended up having to get an office. My very first office was like a two-person office with no windows, because it was cheaper to have an office inside the building with no windows. You know, but it grew like weeds. But the problem you had was that there was no skilled people, right? So all we could really do was look for people that had good sort of soft skills, you know, people that were kind of personable and you know, good with numbers and numerate and literate, unlike me. And I would just kind of hire people. And again, we had a lot of people that would come and join us. We would spend, you know, 3 to 6 months training them up, they would become really good, and then they would go and work for somebody else who was paying a lot more money than I was prepared to pay. And I think, you know, my philosophy at the time was I wasn't prepared to pay the kind of top rate agency dollars, because if I did that, I'd probably have to lay people off in time, and I really didn't want to have to like let anyone go, right? Maybe that was foolish on my part to kind of think, to naively think people would stay because that was a great philosophy. They just wanted the money. But, you know, for me, I kind of I stood by that. But, you know, but again, I had really good training. I trained like some of the kind of the big superstars that have gone on to do really great things with some of the big agencies, you know, kind of passed through my agency way back in the day. And again, I'm still in touch with some of the people now, and you know, they still go, thank you so much for giving me a start in this industry, you know. But for me, for Gear, I'm in the position now where, you know, I love the industry, I love helping people, always have, probably always will, and for me, I just think it's one of those, as much as there's so much information available now, I still think there's a huge amount of stuff missing, right? And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to help fill in some of those blanks, you know, with training and stuff like that. But you know, but I guess for me, it's really just a case of, you know, there is a learning curve that you can go through. A lot of it is, you know, you can kind of do it sort of self-learning, right? So again, I always kind of say to people, you know, the very first thing you need to do if you're going to come into this industry, you know, you can kind of sign up and do all the Google ads yourself, you can do all the Facebook ads, like the kind of studying tutorial stuff, you can do all that yourself. And I think that kind of shows initiative on the part of the people wanting to come into the industry, right? I think that the, you know, to expect an agency to kind of hire you and then you have to kind of go through that learning curve, it, you know, you can kind of cut a lot of that out by doing that.
So, you know, that kind of, it's almost like a perfect segue into just, is there anything that you would change or that you wish you knew back in the day when you started? Versus, I mean, obviously, you know, hey, I'd love to buy all this kind of stock or whatever. That's not what I'm asking.
I'd love to have founded YouTube, founded Facebook, founded Twitter. People always say, wow, Jim, you're really smart. I'm like, no, because Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, they've all started since I've started an industry. Now, if I was really smart, I'd have thought of those as well. But there we go.
No, that's great. Sorry, go ahead, Dave. You were going to jump in.
No, I was just laughing. Because yeah, the Ubers and Slack is now worth $17 billion.
Yeah,
really, Slack?
And you hate Slack?
Good for them. I know I hate Slack.
We all hate Slack, right?
Yeah, it's like email, but except it's not organized. That's how I look at it. Like I can't follow threads and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So to answer your question, Matt, of like, is there anything, you know? For me, it's like, I guess really I look at my so back in the day, the original model that we had was, whatever we spent on media, we got a 15% kickback from Google, and we also got a 15% kickback from, at the time it was Yahoo, Overture, and you know, I mean, we had like, I think we had a $4 million a month line of credit with Google, and I think we had like net 90 terms with Yahoo. So for us, I mean, it was great. You know, we could kind of do lots of things, but I guess for me the thing I kind of go, well, I wish I could have done something different. So some of the agencies that kind of grew and sold for much, much bigger money than I sold my agency for, you know, they basically, they took probably more risk by actually, you know, their fee structure was, they basically said, we'll buy the traffic, we'll sell you the leads, right? So rather than it being, you know, we just manage the account and you get what you get, they actually, you know, in some cases, so if they could buy the leads for $5 using Google because the traffic was cheap, right? And they had somebody that would pay them $100, they would be making $95 profit on a $5 lead, right? Whereas I'd be making, you know, sort of like 75 cents on a $5 lead because I was charging a 15% of spend model, right? So for me, again, I think maybe my model was wrong, but at the end of the day, it was what it was. It worked for me. Again, I'm not complaining in any way because it was very lucrative. I was able to grow and sell a business from like absolutely nothing, using my own money, to 25 people. I think when we sold it, our turnover was about £8 million a year. So, you know, I mean, it was decent, business for 2006. I mean, again, I think when you look at it now, you know, it probably pales into insignificance considering some of the advertisers' spends now. But, you know, certainly back then it was, you know, we were decent. And we were definitely sort of one of the top sort of 50 or so agencies in the UK for kind of turnover. So,
well, in this industry, you know, the paid or however you want to call it, like, I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on, like, where do you see it? Like, do you see it being much different 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Or is it going to be the same? Or like, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I mean it's interesting. I mean, I think one of the reasons why we will probably always provide a done for you service, right? So if there's companies that want to hire an agency to kind of manage things, we can still do that, right? But I think a lot more people want a kind of like, you know, done with you, as in, you know, they work collaboratively with us, we help to kind of educate them on some of the new things that are coming out, new ad formats, or, you know, new tools and techniques of doing things, right? Because, yeah, it's so difficult. I mean, you know, that's the one thing I hate about the companies that we work with, so the Facebooks and the Googles and the Microsoft, is, you know, I mean, probably Microsoft not so much, but certainly Google and Facebook, they're engineering companies, right? So, you know, their dissemination of information that's a benefit to advertisers is really, really bad, right? So I think one of the reasons we've done well is we've been able to read what they come out with, interpret it, and turn it into something actionable that is of benefit, right? Whereas I think most people, you know, a new feature come out, right, and either they don't even know it exists, right, or, you know, they kind of try it and it just doesn't work. So we try to kind of take everything they come out with, analyze it, and say, what benefit will that be? But I think, you know, I think more and more companies are going to want to try and bring things in-house. Yeah, certainly at an enterprise level, I think the value add of, certainly on the paid side of things, the value add of agencies is kind of, it's moving away. And I think that's partly driven by, you know, some of the algorithmic stuff that Google and Facebook are coming out with. So like, again, if you look at Facebook, you can get pretty good results if you sort of set things up and have broad audiences and let Facebook do the heavy lifting, right? And as much as I'm a big control freak and it freaks me out that I'm having to kind of trust Facebook to do what they say they're going to do, but they do it pretty well, right? And I think, you know, some of the kind of new ad formats that Google are coming out with, you know, they come out with, like, you know, these smart campaigns where basically you have no control over anything, right? So again, when smart shopping came out, I'm like, oh, I'm not really sure about that, because, you know, I like to be able to go into an account and say, right, these are the keywords I don't want you to match me for, right? Like, you say these are my negative keywords, but like with smart shopping, you don't have any of that, right? It's like there's no box for you to be able to kind of poke in and play around with, right? So you get what you get given, right? But we've run kind of extensive tests, and, you know, typically smart shopping, if you have access to it, you need a certain number of conversions to get access to it. But if you have access to it, you will get better performance than just sort of your standard shopping. Yeah. So for me, it's like, you know, I think the element of trust has got to be there. You've got to kind of, as much as we try and resist it, we have to accept that, you know, machine learning, AI is part of the here and now, and it will only get better as we move forward. So, you know, I think agencies will need to kind of reposition themselves in terms of what they do and try and diversify a little bit. So again, we're doing a lot more programmatic, we're doing a lot more kind of cross-channel, because again, Google might be great at Google, but Google are not very good at remarketing to Facebook visitors, you know, if you haven't kind of created those Facebook audiences in the first place, right? So we try and we understand that the user journeys don't take place just in one platform, so they don't all spend their time just on Facebook or just on Google, right? They move around a bit, and they move around different devices. Again, I mean, if you look at around your house, I mean, I bet you know, probably within 5 feet of where you are now, you probably have about 6 devices that are connected to the internet, right, that you could access email or, you know, surf the internet with or something like that. Yeah, and that's what most people are doing, right?
That's great. That's fairly accurate in my situation right now.
There we go. and I don't even know where you are, Matt, so.
Oh, man.
He's in a sunny area. I have a question, Jim.
It's raining.
So, you're in London. It's always raining there.
Exactly.
Except when I visit, then it's at least somewhat nice. So it has been. So I'm like, I do PPC every so often, like, you know, for my clients. And anytime I'm somewhere where Jim is, I am probably peppering him with questions. But like my support system for me, and what I've seen from small businesses that then hand over their AdWords or Ads Express or whatever it's called now, the it scares me. And they're like, the stuff that they're being told to do by Google is just atrocious, and it makes no sense.
Scary.
Other than spending all of their budget in one day, And when their budget's $500 a month and, you know, they're told to create one campaign and just put $100 in there a day. And, you know, suddenly they sell shoes. So they're told to bid on shoes. I've literally seen an equivalent for B2B software.
Well, where, Dave, the scariest is when you have those same Google employees, you know, that are supposed to be helping you.
They're not Google employees.
They're asking your account managers how to do stuff. I'm talking like actual legit Google employees, because, like, you know, we have those Google conferences that we put on.
Yeah.
So, like, I know they're actual Google people, but what's scary is how, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to like cut you off, but it just got me thinking how it's funny those people are asking like how to manage or how to work their own products, and they work for Google. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, that's what I find interesting and scary. From the AI side of it, for the accounts that I typically manage, we don't get enough conversions in some of the campaigns and the ad groups to let it take over. It doesn't have enough data to make good decisions. But I've also seen the human side when I work with people, and I'm just curious, do you get decent support? Do you not want to throw them under the bus? I won't fault you for that.
Well, but okay, so I'll answer that question. So, I mean, we have had, I mean, again, I think, you know, like, again, I think if you take Google and Facebook, I'll kind of throw them kind of in the same kind of mix, because they're probably suffering the same issue. So I think Google are probably, they're the legacy business that have grown a big business, right? They don't have enough people to kind of support agencies the way they should, right? They still have they're trying to support small businesses. So they're trying to do a lot of like self-service kind of small businesses to get them up and running. So again, they go, hey, here's $120 worth of free traffic and blah, 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 right? And we'll set up the accounts. And as you say, they come up with some, you know, absolutely horrible kind of targeting. They come up with some horrible keywords. And it's like, you know, and really, I think it's like they give small business owners like false expectations. I mean, you know, some of the keywords I've seen them bid, they go, yeah, we're going to put this in. And you look and they got like $8 bids on like stupid keywords that, like, you think in a million years you shouldn't be bidding $8. But, you know, that's just the way they've been trained, right? But, you know, so we get access to support, right? But the reality of it is that we tend not to kind of lean on it. The only thing I would kind of say, well, yeah, it's great to have AdWords support, is when they come out with a beta, if there's something that you can kind of get early access to. I mean, again, we always used to get access to all of the early betas that came out with, and that gave us the opportunity to kind of test things out before it kind of got released to everyone else. And by the time it got released to everyone else, they would then have to spend 3 months working it out, and we knew exactly how it worked, and we could kind of kill it for that 3 months, right? And then when it stopped working, you know, we would be moving on, and we'd be kind of playing with the next toy that they'd thrown at us, right? You know, so I think you know, Google have that support. I mean, I'll give you an example. I'm not going to kind of name names, but they have a kind of a growth team inside of Google, and they said, oh, we want to work with one of your clients. Great, fantastic. So they basically pleaded with me to kind of allocate some budget, and I gave them a kind of comparatively small budget, and they wanted to run some YouTube ads, they wanted to run some display ads, right? And I'm like, well, you know, we tried it, didn't really work. Oh no, it'll definitely work with us, right? So okay, fine, let's do it. So I kind of gave them a small couple of grand budget. They ran it. It was a complete disaster. And I said, look, I told you it wasn't going to work, guys. Yeah, sorry about that. We you know, we'll just kind of, if you need any help, you know where we are and everything else. And again, it was just like, I might as well have taken $2,000 and burnt it in a fire
pit. This is my shock face. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I had one, like, I used to have a really good person for the last 2 years, and then they left the company last year. And for me, I mean, I manage, you know, really small people, try to get them started. Most of the time, you know, they don't even have ads set up, you know, let alone, you know, maybe their analytics isn't even set up, which is a different problem. But I had one legacy client who hadn't disconnected me, and I honestly forgot. And they were spending between 10 and 20 grand. And every so often I'd get pinged by someone new that was probably from the growth team going, hey, we have some optimizations and some suggestions, because, you know, we saw that the spending in this one account dipped. And I'm like, I'm not sure what you're going to do, but no.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. So again, I mean, when you talk to some people at Google, they will tell you that the Google policy is that every single channel that you run should have a separate ad account, right? So like if you're doing Google Display Network, separate ad account. YouTube, separate ad account. you know, search, separate ad account, remarketing, separate ad account, right? And I'm thinking, well, that's like insane, right?
Who wants to manage all that?
Well, again, I mean, forgetting about the complexity of the management, it's like, you know, you've got conversion tracking, you've got, you know, again, it's easy to kind of hook it up, but it's like, it's still, you know, it's painful. And the reason that they do that is the way Google rewards agencies sometimes is they reward you based on the growth of your account, right? So, you know, like, yeah, like on my, yeah, on my account, I mean, we have two specializations, and I've lost two, and I've lost them because we haven't had any growth in those areas, right? And the reason we haven't had any growth is I'm just not going to play silly games and set up new accounts just for the sake of setting up new accounts. You can set them up and not spend a penny on them, right? But it'll still count as like you've got new accounts, right? So to me, I think that whole thing is a bit of a nonsense, right? I mean, the thing I'm quite excited about, I mean, so again, like if you look at the barrier to entry is really low to be an agency in this world, right? And, you know, I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years. Doesn't count for anything really because, you know, again, anyone with a slick website could make themselves look amazing and probably have people, you know, sign up to be clients and then they've never run ads before in their lives, right? And how are they going to know that the person's bad at it? So Facebook have actually come out with a new like marketing partner program, right? And again, I think what that will be good for is it will be good for sorting the kind of wheat from the chaff. So they've got three tiers and obviously some of the tiers are based on how many accounts you manage. They're also based on how much you spend and also your sort of exposure to the various kind of solutions that Facebook has. So it's like, do you run Instagram ads and audience network and Messenger and all that sort of stuff? So for me, that's great because I think it'll, all the kind of cowboy agency people that run themselves as Facebook ad agencies, you know, they'll be kind of found out now, right? Because anyone that's any good will be like a preferred agency and they have different tiering for, you know, you get a lot more benefits as a preferred agency, you know, which should in theory mean that the kind of the good clients will gravitate towards those agencies because they've got kind of better tools and resource available to help them. And I'm hoping that Google will sit up and take notice of they need to do something to kind of rectify their program. Because I think the partner program at the moment with Google, sorry, Google, I'm kind of throwing you under the bus here, but I think your partner program has been very neglected of late.
I think so. I mean, it was always interesting, but the couple of years when I spent at Kavaria, which, you know, I know, Matt, you guys have a certain level, and Jim, I know you send, but I think Kavaria, when I was there before they were joined with iProspect, I don't think they were the largest, but we certainly had a very large spend, and, you know, it was just weird being on e-commerce and various calls where I would hear our PPC person talk about like the five betas that they were either looking at or had just come out and do we have any interest in? And I just hearing beta, 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 and all those years of in-house, even when I was spending in our internal team, we were spending $1-3 million. What do you see the jump from, you know, for an agency or even other people in-house? Does it really jump that much from the access to the betas, depending on how big you are?
Oh, not really. No, again, I think a lot of it is, you know, the betas, they tend to be more PR stunts now, right? They're looking for the case studies, the video testimonials, that sort of thing. That's why they're kind of putting people into the betas. Again, I don't know.
It mostly is now.
Yeah, I don't know if you watched the kind of Google Marketing Live event. Again, they had some woman on stage who was, you know, like she was an advertiser, but I mean, honest to God, she was like a Stepford wife. She'd been brainwashed to kind of, you know, her presentation.
All the talking
was so,
points and
oh my God, it was just painful to watch. Right,
I remember thinking that. Yeah, I know which one you're talking about.
You know, and again, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, the results have been great and everything else, but it's like, you know, they're citing, you know, the performance, you know, they got a however many percent uplift. It's like, if you're in a beta and nobody else has access to it, then of course you're going to get those sorts of results, right? Because nobody else can use it, right? For me, the whole point of a beta is like, you know, it's there for you to basically, you know, get really good results cheaply, right? And give them feedback on kind of...
Or for it to fail and you're taking a risk.
Yeah, or for it to fail, yeah. I mean, again, yeah. I mean, I think we took part in a few betas that were just horrible, and we kind of gave them the feedback, and they never saw the light of day, and you know, and that's fine. And you know, we were prepared to throw a little bit of money. And again, like as an example, so I mentioned to you that the growth team that we had at Google that wanted to help us, they said, oh, we got these new campaigns come out. But again, I mean, we have had access to some other campaign types that have been really good, right? I mean, like, so again, I don't know if you've heard of smart display campaigns, right? So smart display campaigns, basically, you only pay for results, right? So if you say, mm-hmm. I'm only gonna pay you when I get a sale for $30, right? Then basically you don't pay for a click, you don't pay for an impression, and Google work out whatever they need to work out for you to get your conversions to $30, right? So you could end up, I mean, we had some days where we would have like, you know, a million and a half impressions, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 clicks, and not pay a penny because we didn't get a conversion. But the traffic still kind of goes through to your site, so we still get that kind of uplift. And you know, and again, I think what we found was that we actually, in addition to obviously getting the conversions that we wanted at the price we wanted, we also found that there was a kind of like a halo effect to all the other campaigns that we were running. Like, so we got a lot more brand awareness because we were getting impressions that ultimately we weren't paying for. You know, as part of the kind of solution that they came out with. And again, I think it's one of those things. I think as the adoption for smart display increases, it'll probably become less valuable as it is now. But certainly, you know, it's now at a point where, you know, again, we're running it and it's good. And we're really pleased that that was a beta that they came out with that we got involved with and we got good results with it.
So that that kind of leads me to my next question. Because I mean, not that it's shocking, or I guess it's kind of like interesting that there is that opportunity with what you're just, you know, how you set your parameters and what you want to pay. But I guess kind of shifting into the next part of that is, as you've been doing, you know, whether it's the new stuff, old stuff, like over the course of your career, have you ever come across anything that's shocked you? Like, what shocks Jim?
What shocks me? Well, I'll tell you what shocks me is how gullible some advertisers are. They basically implicitly trust everything that comes out of Google's mouth and Facebook's mouth, right? So if Google say, you should be paying, you know, it's again, I mean, I always used to say to people, they go, oh, we need to increase the bids. I'm like, what makes you think that? Well, I've logged into the account and Google says we should be paying like $12 for this keyword. I'm like, not a chance, no way, right? but obviously every single keyword will have a different price, and I'm sure it's like arbitrary, made up, whatever. And so many advertisers I know will kind of, because Google say it should be that, that's what they do.
Yeah.
Right? So again, it shocks me that even enterprise companies, again, I mean, I spend a fair bit of time doing audits, right? Again, I'm not talking sort of super cheap, like, you know, automated audits. I mean, this is a kind of real deep dive into stuff.
Yeah.
Right, and again, I'm still stunned at how many really super super basic mistakes even enterprise companies spending millions of dollars a month are making. Right, and they're not leveraging remarketing. They haven't got, you know, their dynamic remarketing parameters set up properly. You know, their audiences kind of like they've got an all user audience, and that's pretty much it. And you're thinking, wow, how dumb are you? Right, I mean, there's so much money that they're leaving on the table. You know, and again, it's you know, they're just using like Google Analytics as the kind of conversions. And again, I mean, even when you watch Google YouTube videos, I mean, you know, they always talk about, oh, you know, you can either use your analytics conversion or you can set up your kind of Google Ads conversions if you want, right? And I'm like, if you're running Google Ads and you're not using the Google Ads conversion, then attribution is just going to be out the window, right? The whole thing is totally, totally different. Right, in terms of what, where, who gets the credit and when, right? And if you're making decisions based on attribution from Google Analytics, you'll get completely set of different results than if you're basing it on the Google Ads conversion.
Interesting. Cool.
So anyone listening, if you're looking at your conversions and you're using analytics, you need to change it.
Like, there you quick. Go. See, I told you, no matter what, you're going to get nuggets from these. All right, so I really just have, and again, you know, I'm not sure if Dave has anything else to follow up with that, but I guess one of my final questions for you And we can take this whatever way we want, but who inspires you, Jim?
Who inspires me? Whew.
And it could be someone in the industry. It could be someone that helped you in the industry. It could be someone you see up and coming. Just
or
like,
has inspired you over the years.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, I mean, like when I first started out, I mean, it was one of those, I was like, I don't really know what to do. I don't know where to go. I don't know who to talk to. So like Dixon Jones, I mean, he's been kind of one of my kind of compadres from the very beginning. I mean, at one point in time, we looked at possibly merging our businesses. But again, I've kind of like loved seeing his journey and his kind of Sozern into Majestic and retirement and back out of retirement. And, you know, I mean, I actually spent two days with him at two events last week, right, on the same day.
How long was he retired? Like 5 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. He announced his retirement, and then I talked to his wife at the UK Search Awards, and she was like, "No, he's not retiring." Right? So
almost retired, Mr. Dixon. Yeah. Almost retired.
He nearly got out the door, but you know, he did win the Lifetime Achievement Award on the back of not being in the industry anymore. But you know, I thought, is he going to give it back? But he's not. So he's definitely been inspirational. Brett from PubCon, Brett Tabke, very, very inspirational. I've known Erica, his wife, longer than I've known Brett. And again, I love Erica to pieces, and they're a great couple, and I love spending time with them whenever I can. Bill Hunt, again, I'm one of these people. I don't do SEO. I mean, I'm kind of, I can probably dabble at it and be reasonable, nowhere near like the same level as you guys. But, you know, I'm kind of probably a little bit dangerous. But I can sit and watch Bill Hunt and Motoko talk all day long and just, again, go, wow, I am so nowhere near as smart as I thought I was in this industry. Just
that's you know. A pretty amazing who's who's list. Just the what you mentioned already. Cool.
I've tried to kind of get on a plane, go out and see as many people as I can. Try to kind of network as many people as I can. I've made some great friends in the industry. You know, we've obviously lost some people in the industry, which again is very sad. I don't want to get morose and everything, but for me, anyone that kind of works from home on their own, I mean, you need to kind of go and kind of do real life in, like in-person events. Otherwise, you know, it gets very lonely. So
absolutely.
So go to PubCon, go to SMX, go to, you know, any event you can kind of get to. If there's something locally, just get off your bum, go and put some clothes on and get down to a local event.
Are we going to be seeing you at PubCon this year?
I hope so. I mean, I hadn't actually kind of booked to go just yet because I've got a few things that I'm kind of taking care of, like family wise. And last year I was at PubCon, I was like really ill, so I'm kind of like, oh, I'm not sure I want to do that. But I'm hoping to be there.
Who's going to hold down the chandelier bar?
Oh yeah, Dave. I think it'll probably be me. But that might mean I don't make it to PubCon. I might just go to the chandelier bar. Right?
What? How, so people that don't know Jim, they have no idea what I'm talking about, but people that do will know what I'm talking about. The chandelier bar, how and when did you find it? And how is that, like, I think on Foursquare and every like social thing, you are the mayor there probably.
I tell you what's really funny. I mean, I've obviously invested heavily into kind of like the relationship I have with the bar, right? But I don't even know how long ago it was, but I went there, had a great time. They had like live music behind the kind of bar downstairs, and it was just phenomenal, right? So ever since, like, every time I go back, I always kind of love going to the bar. It's a great bar, good for people.
It's a great
watching,
space.
Right? It's good. It's got good throughput of people. You know, people can usually find you. I've had so many people come up to me, like, because they know I'm going to be there, and they just kind of come up and say hi. I've also had people that kind of go, you know, they post on Facebook, I'm in Vegas, I'm in the chandelier, but it's really disappointing Jim's not here, right? And I keep thinking I should try and do a deal, like, you know, all these influencer marketing things that kind of exist. Like, I feel I should be the kind of the brand evangelist for the chandelier, right? I mean, I got my own hashtag, right?
Yeah,
bad decisions with Jim Banks, right? But it's like, you know, and I've got to thank Rob Snell for that. He was the guy that kind of conjured that up. I think for me, it's you know, again, I don't know what it is. I mean, you know, people always say, what's the plan? I'm like, there is no plan. I'll be in the chandelier bar. And people, you should come here and you should do this and you do that. I'm like, I'll be in the chandelier bar, right? And again, it's not that I'm being antisocial, because, you know, if anything, I'm probably even more social, because I'm doing a lot of networking with people I don't even know. And, You know, and usually a lot of people from the shows kind of find me. And again, I'm very touched and blessed that people feel that I'm good enough company that they want to come and spend time with me.
Sounds like what we need to do, Dave. You know that company that does the cardboard cutouts? Is it Fatheads or whoever you use? We need to get a.
I know prints.
Yeah, we need to get a.
They're out of here in Chicago.
We need to get a printout of Jim that is permanently in the chandelier bar. People come up, take pictures with it. There you go.
There we go.
Or they should make a wax thing of you.
I look at it and I keep thinking, like, I don't even know how much money I'm spending at the place. But I'm frightened to look at credit card statements because of it. But you know, but it's like I look at it and go, every single kind of receipt that I've got from there, right, has got this. You know, if you're a member of the, I think it's called the Identity Club program or something, you can get 300 points and 200 points. I'm thinking, I mean, I could pretty much own the hotel with the amount of money I must have spent behind the bar in points that I don't have, right? I am dreadful at, like, loyalty programs. And I've probably been one of the most loyal people. I'm sure if I had joined their loyalty program, they would see how loyal I've been. But, you know, but I didn't.
Oh, yeah, you should have. Because, yeah, every time there's a conference, I'm like, and you're in Vegas, I just expect at least at some point there's going to be a picture of you at that bar.
But it's really interesting. So again, I mean, this year I was actually, I went to an event in, when was it, earlier, tail end of last week. I went to another one of the events organized by the Don't Panic team, the people that run the US Search Awards.
Mm-hmm.
And I got invited to kind of one of their other events by Dixon. He said, Jim, there's a spare ticket. Do you want to come along? And I'm like, sure, why not? And I was talking to Nikki, who runs the US Search Awards. I mean, this is the first year, I think ever since they started, that I'm not actually judging the US Search Awards.
Oh, you're not?
Like,
okay.
Because normally I'm a judge, and I love doing it. I love being involved in that and making sure that there's integrity in who the winners are. Again, I mean, a lot of people go, oh, you know, it's just an awards thing. It's a fix. But I can say absolutely, categorically, it's absolutely not. If you win an award, you've done really incredibly well. Even if you're shortlisted, you've done like well, because you know there's a lot of entries for them. You know, for each of the entries, certainly in the US, we probably have 30-40 entries for every single category. You know, so to have like six people make the shortlist, it's like, it's a big deal, you know, to actually make kind of that level. But you know, she was, oh, you know, you should come along, come to the US Search Awards, you can be my guest, blah blah blah, right? And I'm like, oh, you know. And again, that's what's kind of rekindled my my kind of desire to want to be there. So I've been looking at, you know, how I can kind of get there. I want to try and maybe go and sort of route through Salt Lake City, see one of my clients who is based there, and then maybe drive down to Vegas for a couple of days and do PubCon. So I'm kind of deferring this decision until as late as I can make it. And
you got a few months. I didn't even bought my airfare yet, and I'm a speaker.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I said to Brett, look, you know, because he came over, I think he's planning a kind of big deal for PubCon next year in London.
Yes, next
kind of
year.
Where it started.
No date yet. That reminds me.
But I think he was over here kind of doing a bit of a recce. So I went out and had some drinks and dinner with him and Ian Turner and Neil, who's Engine from Webmaster World. Anyone that's kind of been around a while would know those names. But, and I was saying to Brett, oh, you know, I'm not really sure. And I said, you know, if I kind of come along, will you be able to? He goes, oh, you know, I'll find something for you to do. And I said, look, even if it's like, you know, be out the front handing out lanyards with Amanda, I'll quite happily do that, right? And again, anything I can go.
You might want to get Amanda to prove that.
Yeah, she won't. Yeah, she won't. Because I'd probably do it better than she would. Because I'd be doing it with a British accent.
Oh.
And everyone loves the British accent.
It's true.
This is true. That's why we had you on.
Is that it?
Is that the only reason? Well, there's lots of reasons.
Yeah,
I just thought of that. It makes sense.
You could have had Dixon on or Mel Carson.
But you know, Mel lives in the U.S. right now, so does that even count?
But he still kind of talks like Hugh Grant. So
we've already had Simon on a long time. We haven't had him on for a while, but we've had Simon on before. So I think your only second British accent that I can think of.
Wow. I feel honored.
Well, I guess I'm just kind of wrapping this up, Jim. Is there anything, you know, any final thoughts of anything you'd like to share regarding the industry or just kind of what you're up to or where you're going? And we'll just finish it up with that.
Yeah, again, I think if you look at it, the one thing I would say is, even though I've been in the industry for 20 years, I celebrated 20 years in April, Congrats. And I know there's a few people that have been doing it a little bit longer than me, but you know, for me, again, it's like I've never done anything for 20 years ever. So for me, it's like a major achievement. And again, I've loved the industry, been blessed to be in it. I still think in terms of the journey of where we're actually ultimately going to end up, you know, we're probably not even like halfway there, right? I think there's still so much to kind of come from it. I still want to try to kind of do my bit to kind of help nurture new people coming into the industry, help train them, make sure that they kind of get the right, you know, guidance in terms of what to do, what not to do, you know, because again, it's very easy to kind of become just a commodity coming into the industry. You know, you could become an account manager and you do this and do that. And, you know, I just think it's one of those, we got to do good work for our clients, right? Always. Right. And again, everything that I try and do is I try and make sure that whoever it is that's working, whether they're one of my clients or somebody else's clients, that they're being looked after in the right way. Because otherwise, if they're being ripped off, that like impacts all of us in a bad way. Right. I think all suffer if clients have a bad experience, not just the person who was the agency that actually looked after them. They can move on to kind of rip off other clients. I just think it's one of those people become very skeptical. Yeah. So again, I'm trying to, you know, again, I'm not trying to go, hey, this is my training program and this is the best thing in the world. But what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to, you know, set up an environment where people can come and learn kind of some of what I've done. And
so you're you're learning from a guy that's been doing this for 20 years.
Yeah. And again, I mean, I can honestly say, Matt and Dave, I've made a ton of mistakes, right? And I think a lot of what I've learned has been learned from the mistakes I made. Absolutely. Along the way, right? Both in terms of hiring people, setting things up. I mean, I sold my first agency in 2006, and as great as it was to sell a business, I made so many mistakes in the process. Right? And I've offered people, like, look, you know, come and let me kind of advise you on, you know, if you have the opportunity to sell your business, let me tell you the mistakes I made so you don't make those mistakes. And so many people, no, it's fine, I got it. Right? And then you talk to them 6 months after they sell their businesses, and they're, you know, oh, I should talk to you, I made a mistake and blah, blah, blah.
That's a mistake. The mistake, if you learn from it, I don't think mistakes are bad. I mean, obviously there can be downsides, but if you're learning from it, it's not the worst thing. But if you're making mistakes over and over and over, or if you're making mistakes, or someone even know, like you said, you know, you offered to help them so that they wouldn't, they could have not listened to you and still done what they wanted, but
yeah,
they should have at least said, yeah, help me. Yeah, tell me what you did. And maybe they could have at least fixed some of those. And they would have been like, yeah, oh yeah, this is exactly what Jim said. And then this is what happened.
I don't come across when I'm talking to people as a conceited know-it-all, because I'm not, right? I absolutely don't have all the answers. I know plenty, tons and tons of people much, much smarter than me, you know, like much more, again, some of those people that I said, like I'm inspired by, you know, they're much smarter people than I, you know, than me. And, yeah, I mean, again, I think it's one of those things, like my journey is not defined by have I made tons of money. I mean, I've done okay. I've never had to worry about, you know, where my next bill's going to be paid and everything else. But at the same time, you know, I've tried to put, you know, my family and, you know, and my health and everything else before kind of the pursuit of just like an 8-figure business or a 10-figure, like, you know, so that's not really kind of been the driving force of me. Awesome. So,
well, that's great. I don't, any final thoughts, Dave?
Nope. Thank you for joining us, Jim. Jim had a very long day today, but we were able to snag him. So thank you for joining us.
Yes. Thank you very much, Jim. This has been fascinating.
And hopefully I will see you guys in September
or October, or next year in London for,
or whatever it is. Or, yeah.
Yeah,
but
hopefully at both. One of those.
See you in the Chandelier Bar in October.
that too.
All right, guys. Well, for Jim Banks and Dave Rohr, I'm Matt Siltala, and I appreciate you guys joining us on this episode, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye, guys.
Thanks.